The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you're afraid that if you become a Christian, you'll lose your individuality. After all, don't all Christians act the same and think the same? My friend, I'm not sure which universe you were in when you ran into Christians, but in this universe, they barely ever agree on anything. Important matters? Sure. Who is Jesus Christ? Why did he come? How are we saved? On those subjects, we must agree, but there are all kinds of differing churches and denominations which disagree on matters of worship, baptism, church structures, politics, and yes, often you will hear Christians disagree on the arts. For example, my guest today is film critic Mark Boobian, no stranger to our program, here to continue a discussion we began on last week's show regarding the film Noah. Now, it seems that Mark likes Noah. He actually likes it. Whereas my own feelings about the film, well, let's see, how should I phrase this? If God ever made me a multimillionaire, I doubt that while having my will prepared, I would leave my fortune to director Darren Aronofsky so that he could produce more Bible-based movies. Be that as it may, Mark, welcome back to our program.
Thanks for having me again, Bob. I really appreciate being on. I'm not sure I'd leave my money to Aronofsky for making Bible movies either. I still like the movie, but yeah, he may not be the best ever choice for making further movies about biblical characters. Maybe someone, I don't know, like Joseph. Nah, never mind. Okay.
Maybe if he wanted to make some documentary about how to assemble a flashlight or something, he'd do a really good job with that. I don't know. But,
it would actually end up being really artsy and esoteric, yes, though, so nobody would take anything away. And that's one of the reasons I like him as a director, because he is artsy and esoteric.
Well, I did say I liked The Black Swan, and that was a weird movie. It was
weird
and unusual, but I found it engrossing. I liked it.
And I believe you did see his first movie. It's called Pi. I think we went together, but it's a long time ago.
Oh, is that the one that was nominated for? No, that was Life of Pi.
Life of Pi. This is, yeah, and it's easy to confuse
the two. But we used to have film festivals at Mark's house, so I've seen many things.
And this was one we went out to, though.
I like a lot of the movies Mark introduces me to. I really do. I believe I did see that, but I must say it was so many years ago, I don't remember
about
it.
The funny thing about...
Wasn't that the guy that kept scribbling on the wall? Wasn't it the pie that goes into the equation?
It was the pie that goes into the equation.
They don't mean the pie you eat. They mean pie.
Unfortunately, no, not the pie you eat. Though there's this scene with the brains in a cup on the subway floor. So maybe it's good it wasn't the pie you eat.
Maybe it's good that I blocked it out of my mind. I don't remember it.
Yeah, and And this would be a good point to talk about some of the artistic and things in the Noah movie, because some of the strengths of the movie end up being its weaknesses, and it has a lot to do with who Aronofsky is as a director and how he's done past movies and what I've seen in his past movies, what I liked and disliked. For example, I bring up Pi because I despised that movie when I saw it the first time. Well, I've only seen it once, so I could just say I despise the movie.
Period.
The first movie I've ever seen that gave me a headache, and I never since,
oh, you
never
must have
before.
Forgotten my favorite or least favorite, Con Air.
Con Air. No, I haven't, Bob. Believe it or not, I have not. But I bet it didn't give you a headache.
I still think that was one of the worst movies ever made, period.
Yes, and we go back to expectation. I was expecting garbage, and I got, well, you know, maybe somewhere in the dumpster Con Airs there, but that's what I was expecting.
Right.
So.
Our expectations do have a lot to do with the way we go into movies.
So, and Pi, I didn't know what to expect because I'd never seen an Aronofsky movie. So, I'm not sure what I would have expected either way, but some of the imagery that Aronofsky used, some of the ways he did scenes, he's good at communicating visually, and obviously that's an important aspect of film. Ironically, not a lot of directors are really good at that aspect of filmmaking. Of course, you're seeing a visual presentation, but like Kubrick, for example, was a brilliant visual communicator, where in my favorite movie, Clockwork Orange, he uses random scenes to communicate aspects of the character, Alex, that we're watching in the film, so that there doesn't have to be dialogue. There's just imagery that represents stuff that's going on in his
head.
And
yet when Kubrick includes dialogue, it's usually good dialogue.
Yes, it is. And
even 2001, which had very little dialogue, the little bit that they had was actually good.
Right. It's very well written. And he's a very well-rounded director. But my first real hook with Kubrick was the way he communicated visually. Now, and I would say that Aronofsky is somebody that also really likes to communicate visually. And it's to his strength and weakness that he does so, I think. And Noah, the movie, showed off both of those aspects, where he overdoes it, as in the movie Pi, where he really kind of went overboard. The brains in the cup and the subway, that's overboard. I'm sorry.
I am so glad I don't remember that brains in the cup scene. I know I saw it with you, and I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm so glad I don't know what you're talking about.
I wish I could forget it, to be honest. But, you know, it's stuck in my head. And in later movies, though, like Black Swan that you pointed out, where he's matured as a director and he's kind of calmed down on the need to really overdo, I think.
And he used a
visual.
Tremendous actress, Natalie Portman.
Of course. And he's had that. And
didn't she win the Oscar for Best Actress? For
yes,
that?
Absolutely.
I think she did. And that was well long overdue for her to
win. And she deserved it. Yes. And I mean, anybody in that movie could have won Best practically anything, because there were so many good actors. He did such a brilliant job directing.
Of course,
the movie.
Any actress after lines like Attack of the Clones, where George Lucas writes, say this, I truly, deeply love you. She's got to only look good in the next movie she makes after that.
Yeah, yeah, actually. And to her credit, she was as an established actress, so everybody that saw the Star Wars movies knew what
they knew
she
was wasted in. It's a good thing that wasn't her first movie, because it might have been her last movie.
Right, it might have. Unfortunately, poor Hayden Christensen got typecast and
had trouble. Better accolades when he went on and made the next one, the...
Episode 3?
Episode 3,
yes.
Yeah, the critics liked him.
Now we're talking about Star Wars, but I actually liked him in Episode 2 because I saw...
Anything I can do to avoid us talking about that dumb Noah movie, I'll throw it in here.
Maybe we'll make a connection. Well, you know, there's the Christ figure
thing. Talking about Pi. Keep talking about Natalie Portman. Go ahead, Mark.
Right. Okay, I won't talk about Anakin Skywalker.
Anyway, you were talking about Aronofsky, which did fit the subject matter since he is the director.
Who's Aronofsky again? Is he the guy
the director of that incredible warm family entertainment called Noah?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, your fake review had me going. I kept what
I don't know if
the
audience knows this. On April Fool's Day, I wrote a glowing review of Noah. And then at the bottom, I wrote April Fools. Tomorrow, I'll tell you what I really think of this piece of art. That's the way I wrote it. Then I wrote my real review a few days later.
Right, but I didn't read it on April 1st, so I get a little bit of a break for not getting the joke right up front.
That's okay. the people that read it on April 1st, they didn't. Every single one of them said I got them.
Oh,
except
okay.
A couple of my friends thought I was certifiably insane because they had seen the movie and they thought I had derailed. They were very relieved to see that it was an April Fool's gag.
Yeah, right. Well, the family entertainment line in the review was kind of like, I'm scratching my head thinking, wait, I'm going to have to ask Bob what he meant by that when I finish this review. Of course, it said at the end of the review what you meant by that, so I didn't have to ask. That's the beauty
of... Anyway, folks, I have two reviews about Noah out there. Please, if you read the first... Please read the second one also.
It's a little more well-rounded and definitely explains your point of view.
How I really felt.
Yeah. okay, so Aronofsky, he is a very good visual communicator, like I said, but he does a very good job with the way he approaches Noah visually as well as story-wise, character-wise. But it it plays to his to the detriment of the film in some parts. He has this very long scene having to do with evolution. It's played sort of in this fast-forward type of jittery visuals that are – it's animated and everything. But I watched that. I just kind of was like, okay, give me a break. You know, you can skip this part. I know what you're trying to do. Maybe you should have just rented the scene from Tree of Life. That's really what I – because I couldn't help but compare it to Tree of Life, which was so beautiful.
Tree of Life was a very good movie.
Absolutely.
I liked Tree of Life.
And the scene about evolution, if you could even really call it that, it's about creation in Tree of Life. It really was so beautiful and so that was a scene that really communicated a lot visually as well. And I had a very strong emotional attachment to that part of the movie where Aronofsky, unfortunately, loses me because of what he's doing visually. It was really off-putting to me and a little too drawn out.
And even if I believed in theistic macroevolution, which I don't, the idea that Noah would have understood that enough to explain it to his family was a little bit of a stretch.
Right. He didn't actually come out and say
invertebrates, but still, it was as if he understood that we started with this little cesspool and things evolved.
Yeah, that could be what he was saying.
And again,
he did say in the beginning was nothing,
which I do find significant. The Bible says in the beginning was God. And he starts with in the beginning was nothing, and then somehow God kind of kicks in. And I realize he didn't actually explain it, so it leaves room for interpretation. I understand that.
Right. And that's a good point, though. And I think that's a really good observation, because that may just be the mind of Aronofsky. That's what the Bible said. It said nothing. But as you're pointing out, Bob, really it actually says in the beginning God. Yeah. And that's very important to us as Christians, even as Jews.
Mr. Aronofsky, we're glad the Bible inspires you so much. Next time you want to make a biblical, you might want to crack it open and read the thing.
Okay. If he read it, I don't think it would have helped much, because
he read it, and I believe that he read it and read into it what he wanted to read into it. And I meet people that do that all the time.
Right.
And
anytime you're dealing with some kind of artistic representation of anything, be it the Bible, be it real life, I think you're going to run into this where in terms of creating the art, you're going to have to call it sacrifices, call it artistic license, call it whatever you like, but that's going to have to happen because the story is going to need some things changed to flesh it out most of the time.
But it's not just the arts. I mean, bad theologians and scholars do it too. When they came out with the Jesus Seminar, one of the heads of it said, there's no way I'm believing in a God who says there's only one way of salvation. Okay, fine. He can believe whatever he wants. But by an amazing coincidence now, whenever Jesus said there was one way of salvation through him, they discovered that Jesus actually didn't say that.
Right. So that's
very disingenuous, and you can't really call that scholarship. So for our friend Aronofsky, we don't mean to pick on him. It's human nature to do those kinds of things. All right. Well, we will hear more from Mark about the film Noah, even though he's been talking more about the director of the film Noah up to now. Also, you will recall that last week I spoke just a little bit about another movie that's out right now, God's Not Dead. I promised to review the film this week, so we'll talk about that movie as well when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand, or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today is a pop culture edition as we continue our discussion that began last week regarding the film Noah. Before Mark really gets into the meat of his review, though, there's another movie, an independent film that's doing very well at the box office titled God's Not Dead. I also mentioned this movie last week, and you recall I strongly recommended it. Unlike so many movies produced by Christians and specifically marketed for the church and publicized by the church, this one was a pleasant surprise. It was not predictable or contrived. Neither did it look like the writing was purchased from a pack of 12 for a dollar screenplays. The movie was well written, well directed, well acted. Now, I did say last week that the movie still had a few flaws. And even though as a Christian apologist, I loved the apologetics in this film. Apologetics had a lot to do with the story. I still need to be honest about its flaws just from an artistic point of view. But last week, I was so caught up in the flaws of Noah, I wanted to wait one more week before mentioning the flaws of God's Not Dead. Because believe me, Noah's flaws deserved an isolated discussion. However, at this time, I'll do what I promised last week. I will mention the flaws in God's Not Dead. Now, the criticism is minor, so all of you who like the movie, relax. There isn't much to say except that the antagonists were a little too evil. It's difficult, for instance, to imagine a philosophy teacher accosting his Christian student in the hallway with a warning along the lines of, "How dare you try to make a fool out of me in class?" Okay, now look, there are bitter atheist university professors with personal agendas. That part was very realistic. And occasionally, they do go into tirades. I can vouch for this. I used to argue with them myself back when I was an undergrad, and in the many, 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 many years since I was a young undergrad, as a full-time Christian apologist, I have been a guest speaker in philosophy classes. I've also done formal debates with philosophy teachers out at the universities, and some of the guys were more polite than others. I do remember one who got very upset, even teary-eyed, in the middle of a presentation in a room filled with hundreds of students and faculty alike. So it happens. But even then, on that night when I was witnessing it firsthand, proportionate to his almost involuntary outbursts, he kept trying to save face by quickly changing his demeanor or adding quick disclaimers. And whereas I can imagine a professor wanting to say something like that to a student in the hallway, in most cases, he would be smart enough to keep such feelings to himself. It could happen, and maybe it has happened on rare occasions, but that would be an exception to the rule. Now, I am keeping in mind, this movie, although fiction, is actually inspired by many court cases being defended by the ACLJ, the kind of an answer to the ACLU regarding universities and their dealings with Christian students and Christian faculty. And those cases are listed in the closing credits. There are many of them. But that one scene in the hallway still came across as unrealistic. Now, having said that, this professor is very believable in all of his other scenes with students. There was also another character in the movie, an idiot boyfriend who couldn't wait to tell his girlfriend over dinner in a nice restaurant about his promotion at work. Well, unbeknownst to him, his girlfriend had news of her own. Right after he enthusiastically brags about his promotion, she blurts out, "I have cancer." At this point, the guy immediately responds by saying, "Couldn't this have waited?" Okay, again, yes, the world is full of very selfish people, and this character is accurately portrayed in the film as a conceited narcissist. So it would have been realistic for him to not really care, but I doubt that he would have been so honestly transparent and so quickly blunt. The scene would have played better if he subtly said something to the effect of, gee, I'm sorry to hear that. And then his girlfriend might recognize that he doesn't seem to care, and she might possibly confront his less than empathetic reaction. But for him to just come out that quickly and say, couldn't this have waited, a bit too exaggerated, a bit unrealistic. On the other hand, whereas the non-Christian characters would have been better painted with gray areas and subtle shadows, the Christian characters, I am happy to say, were not painted as flawless angelic saints. They had their idiosyncrasies. There was a discontent pastor who loved God and helped people, but got annoyed with little things and didn't have a whole lot of faith. As for the student who challenges his philosophy professor about God's existence, he does not immediately have answers himself. We see him needing to study up. We see him striking out after his first presentation. And his girlfriend is a piece of work. She, too, calls herself a Christian, but she threatens to break up with her boyfriend if he doesn't stop debating his own teacher, thus endangering his grade and putting his future on the line, a future that she wants to be a part of. She may be a Christian, but she's also a superficial, self-centered twit. And so in many ways, this movie was fair. The fact that Christians were portrayed without unrealistic stereotypes made up a little for the exaggerated stereotypes of some, but not all, of the film's unbelievers. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give this movie an 8. It's one of the better Christian films. It has a genuine, climactic, unpredictable ending, a bittersweet ending. Not every plot gets neatly tied up. Not every character lives happily ever after. Not every character gets saved. Those that do get saved don't do so by accidentally turning on the TV and hearing Billy Graham. A skeptic could watch this film and be genuinely challenged without feeling manipulated. I strongly recommend God's Not Dead. And again, I'm doing that as someone who usually likes secular movies more than Christian movies. But I'm not the only one recommending a movie today, so let's welcome back film critic Mark Boobie. And despite the fact that he recommends Noah, we'll just welcome him back anyway, because after all, would our Lord do less?
I sure hope he wouldn't, Bob. Okay, well, speaking of artistic license earlier, you mentioned the Jesus Seminar, and I think that that is a really good counterpoint to what I see in Noah. Our expectation from the Jesus Seminar is that they're trying to represent the actual truth of the words of the Bible, and they're doing a terrible job because they're letting their own personal biases completely change what the words say. That is not at all ethical in my mind. Now, art is a whole different ball of wax, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, Bob, that artistic license is something people take, and we kind of have that expectation up front. And so I definitely anticipated a lot of artistic license from the movie Noah, and I liked a lot of the artistic license that Aronofsky took because I learned, or I felt like I learned, a lot about the person of Noah, or the potential of who Noah was, of what he possibly went through, and how it relates to me as a human being here and now, and what the things I go through. Now, there's very little that's said about Noah himself, or very little action Noah does in the account, the biblical account of Noah. So almost everything you see Noah do except build the ark and get drunk are artistic license. So he's got to take a lot because he's got to fill in this 2.5-hour movie with this character. And I don't want to necessarily, I'm not going to pull out the Bible and compare scene by scene, of course. But suffice to say that I recognize that this is not going to be an accurate representation of what it says in the Bible. And even some of the things I'm going to take away from the movie may not necessarily be what was intended by the story. There are some things, though, that I think were intended that we've lost as a culture. I mentioned some of those last time, and I guess I'll rehash them right after the break, huh?
Okay, we're reviewing the film Noah with film critic Mark Boobie, and you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and film critic Mark Boubian talking about the controversial film of Noah.
Okay, thanks again, Bob. And insight into Noah's character is some of the things I really like about the film because, like I said, I really appreciate them as a human being seeing another human being struggle with his relationship with God, so to speak, the creator as he's portrayed in the movie. Not necessarily accurate to God, but let's just give that a second chance a little later on. What I liked about Noah himself is that at first he's not sure about what's going on in terms of what God's calling him to do, and he looks to the miraculous signs that are presented to him based on who he knows God to be. Now, in the movie, God is portrayed as the creator. He's actually only referred to as the creator in the film, and this is, I think, partly because of character building for who they want to represent God as in the movie. So he's the creator, and the first sign that Noah gets that something's going on is a raindrop falls into this barren ground and a flower pops up, and that's a sign to him there's something funky about to happen. And then he has the dream sequence, of course, which you can't get around, I guess, in a Bible movie. I don't know. How else do you do?
And don't forget Methuselah's magic beans, which grow the forest where they get
right.
The wood. I remember that from Jack and the Beanstalk.
And it actually kind of seems like
you didn't
like
borrow this from real literature.
Yeah. Hey, I said he was a good director, didn't I? So yeah. He knows his
anyone that can turn Jack and the Beanstalk into Noah, boy, you got to hand it to him.
Okay. Well, I didn't quite see it that way, but I can kind of see where you're coming from, actually. So, you know,
that is where they got the wood to build the ark.
Yes, it is, actually. And
then
that's
after Methuselah helps him out, he gets wiped out in the flood. Oh, yeah, the Bible didn't tell us that either.
Right, right. I know that.
Sorry, Mark. It's just,
it's like I said, I didn't expect a word-for-word translation.
Well,
and
what
of course,
you didn't expect turned out to be 100% accurate.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, and actually, though, that is good for you to point that out, of course, because if people are going to the movie expecting something that is connected directly to the story and about who Noah really was, they're just not going to get
but again,
they're expecting.
I think, and we talked about this last week, there's a difference between saying it's a short narrative, you have to fill something in like Cecil B. DeMille did, and them saying, well, we filled in, but what was in the text was not contradicted. And that is simply not true. They contradicted, it may have only been a little bit of text, but they did contradict that text in
right.
many places.
You did go over those, right?
Is yeah, that, and I went over right? them, yeah. So we don't have to go over them again. But I just, only to say that I am on board with you with artistic license when necessary. And when they came out with the movie Jesus, just called Jesus, based on the Gospel of Mark, a lot of my Christian friends would go, oh, it's great. They don't add any dialogue. They just quote from Mark. Well, Mark wasn't written the way people normally talk. It was what the Hebrews would have, what we would call telescoping. They were synopsises of conversations. And I was thinking this movie would have been better if they did add some dialogue. So that just to show you, I do believe that we do need artistic license as long as the message and the facts aren't being contradicted. That's the difference.
Right. And you know what? In the movie Noah, I'm in and out with you. I agree and disagree because I'm looking at the movie at different parts of the movie. So where I'm going to disagree with you in terms of how it's contradicting something, I think in terms of Noah's character and his struggles. Now, again, there's not a heck of a lot there about him, but I didn't feel that it was really strongly contradictory as long as you know that there's not a heck of a lot about his character and he does a couple of things.
About Noah's character, sure.
Yeah.
About God's character, another story.
And that's where I will agree with you. And let me talk about Noah a little bit
yeah,
first, and then
ahead.
We'll get into God, because those are it's a very good contrast in terms of what you see in the film. Now, Noah, once again, what I liked about him is he's human. He's a person. He's dealing with the God of creation, the God as he knows him. He has a relationship with God. We take that somewhat for granted in the film. He's very close to the creation that's presented to us. And so there's something of a relationship that's more than maybe the silent, unspeaking God that we may kind of have this perception of today. And so we can kind of see that played out in the movie, but he still has to face a lot of the issues, I think, as we do as human beings now, that, again, that silence that we face now. Noah had to face at certain points in the movie where he's praying and he's not getting a direct answer to prayer. He's asking God, tell me what to do. Have I misunderstood what you want me to do? Tell me what to do. And God doesn't respond immediately. And this, to me, now here visually is some of the brilliance of Aronofsky. The scene, Noah is in the ark looking out at the clouded sky. And the absolute impression that I'm getting here is that the clouds are about to part and God is going to speak to Noah. And he, I think, Aronofsky keys in on kind of that perception we have as human beings that that's what's supposed to happen, but the clouds don't part. They stay together. They stay gray and murky, and that's how it is for Noah. He's left to decide for himself by God. Now, that is not the entire story of his relationship with God in the movie. God does give him things that he's supposed to do, does tell him what
to
do directly.
But it's through visions and pictures.
That's
correct.
In
the biblical narrative, God did just speak and speak very clearly
to
him.
Yes, absolutely. God speaks words. And most of the narrative of Noah really is God speaking, God telling us, hey, this is what's going on in the world right now.
Bill Cosby had God speaking more than Aronofsky did.
Right, that's right. And Bill Cosby's version is actually a lot funnier than this movie.
Oh, yes. I don't think anybody's going to mistake this for a comedy.
So one of the thing that I really keyed in on with Noah is that struggle with the relationship with God, having to face sometimes that silence and that not knowing and having to come to, in a sense, come to a decision or come to some sort of revelation through God's quiet guidance. Now,
and I will say visually and as far as special effects go, the movie was very impressive. I mean, I can give them an A+ for the cinematography and special effects.
Right. Now,
I will. So, you know, I'm a fair guy. I'm throwing you a bone here, Mark.
You can throw me that bone,
visually,
but I'm going to.
It was very impressive.
I'm going to toss that bone back because I
See,
thought a lot of.
Probably the one part of the movie Mark didn't like.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Win.
Yeah.
I just can't win. Trying to
well,
throw
you
him
said
a bone.
We disagreed, so I thought I'd come here and disagree
when
about
I throw
everything.
Throw you a bone, you want to agree with that part. Okay. All right. I'm here with my good friend, Mark Boubian, and we have been good friends for years, even though we don't always see eye to eye on movies and other aspects of life we don't always see eye to eye on, but we both love Jesus and we do see eye to eye on that.
Yes.
Anyway, we will be right back.
Kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, and one of our rotating hosts. It's always good to have him, film critic Mark Boobian, today discussing the film Noah.
Thanks, Bob. So now, some of the other things I like about Noah's character is the development we see of his character. Now, I already mentioned him getting the vision and stuff, and then he goes in and to build the ark. One of the things that I think Russell Crowe was brilliant at is sort of communicating a sort of sense of not blind faith, but just uncompromisingly, I'm going to follow no matter what faith because this is what I'm supposed to do. But then it almost I get the sense that it starts to corrupt him because he's so sure that he is God's man at some point. And we don't really see that point in the movie. It's just a vague sort of sense that's communicated. At least that's what I took away from the movie, that he's going to, he's not just following God, but he's doing God's work now. And that means in more than what he was commissioned to do. And at first we don't see any sort of suffering soul. There's nothing he's ever really faced that he's had to overcome except a lot of bad people. And there's a sense that there's nothing he can't overcome on his own because God has commissioned him. And so he develops sort of what I would call a prideful faith, where it's not him and God, or God and him, I guess I should say. It's him, and God is sort of over there. Now, how many times in my life have I done that? And the number is countless, I should say. How many times have I not done that? Then I can probably give you a number because it's so small that I've understood my relationship with God in terms of me doing what God wants me to do and including God in all aspects of that. That's a very difficult thing to do, and it's a very difficult thing to continuously do.
And I think any honest Christian would have to admit that often we're not doing what God wants us to do, even though he's made that relationship possible, that we don't live up to it most of the time.
Right. And boy, thank God for Jesus. What can you say? That is awesome that Jesus takes care of us even in that situation. Now, unfortunately, and for Noah, Jesus hadn't come yet, so you kind of, now this isn't necessarily what the director intended, but from a Christian perspective, I can kind of see his struggle being a lot more dealing with that silent God than say, being able to hang on to the promises of salvation that Jesus has given us. So as this prideful man who's decided that he's going to do everything that God's supposedly,
which includes he thinks God's telling him to see to it that human beings can't ever reproduce again.
Exactly. But the beauty of this is that you see God's will played out in the end. And it's pointed out to us a little bit too much banging on the head by...
Well, but they pointed it out by saying God intended for you to make a choice about whether to kill these baby girls or not. God didn't intend for him to make any such choice. God intended in the Bible for him to just do what he was told.
And
God was never telling him to go out and kill anybody.
Right. Absolutely. The Bible, yeah, it's clear.
So even when they make it look like, well, okay, I was thinking we were being set up for, hey, Noah, I'm not a God that wants you to do that.
Right.
They really didn't exactly give us that, at least not the way I saw it. Maybe you saw it a little differently.
So this is a tough one because I kind of am half and half on this one because absolutely God did not intervene per se. But as you've pointed out, they communicate that, well, God chose you for this. Therefore, it's because you're a good man and therefore you were going to choose to let humanity go on. And that's what God wanted. And God kind of knew that up front.
We could interpret it as, well, God knew the choice you would make, therefore it wasn't really your choice, it was God's choice. Maybe
I'm not quite saying that, but
well,
yeah, it's hard to communicate.
Now you're throwing
that.
Aronofsky the bone. You're the one throwing the bone.
Right. Well, I've been throwing him a bone for a couple of weeks
half and half, I'm thinking I could really go for a 50-50 bar.
Yeah. Okay. Now. Well, now the other half of the story is what you pointed out, though, because we don't see God actively intervene. Now, again, I like that aspect of it, but if Noah was going to pull out the knife and stab the children right at that moment and God didn't intervene, that would absolutely be something that would not I wouldn't even know what to do with that at that point.
And they leave it up in the air as to whether God did intervene. It looks like Noah just suddenly changed his mind. And it's like, well, but God gave you that choice. So it's a little interpretive there.
It is. And that's the thing. Again, it's art. And, you know, we expect. Now, Aronofsky is an atheist. So he's going to approach the story from the eyes of an atheist. Now, that's another thing.
Maybe that had something to do with the universe starting with nothing, his atheism.
Right. And that's actually what I thought of when you reminded me of that quote. Of course, it said that.
And then that could include a pantheistic view of God with the high view of nature. The pantheists believe God and nature are the same thing. So he might have been just assuming that God, the pantheist God, just kind of evolved with the rest of nature.
It's possible.
He doesn't say that in so many words, but... You know, if he is an atheist and he's, consider that possibility.
Yeah, I got to use the word interpretive back to you.
Well,
now.
I said last week that the part about the nothing, that part, you know, I'm making some guesses. The part about Noah even thinking that God wants him to kill the human race, the part about his sons not already having wives, that part we know
is not true.
Contradicted.
Yeah, of course. And if you don't believe us, you can find it somewhere in
Genesis
that book.
Genesis chapter 6
Thanks,
through
Bob.
Chapter 9.
I knew you'd know that one.
Well, that wasn't a hard one. It's only a couple of chapters. You don't need a seminary education for that one.
Yeah, speak for yourself. I probably do, to be honest. But,
You know who else could have used a seminary education?
Yeah. I walked into that one, didn't I?
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mark. I'm having so much fun.
Yes,
I shouldn't be having it at your expense.
Okay, so then let me talk about the bad guys now, because you're having so much fun, because we'll talk about the bad guy. I like the bad guy in the movie. He's half and half sometimes, though, because he was a little too stereotypical and some stupid things happened with him.
Well, he knew the Bible better than Noah. What's not to like about the alleged
bad guy?
And this is the
part I actually liked about him the most, is that he quoted the Bible badly.
Well, that is true. The phenomenon of quoting scripture and twisting it and taking it out of context, that's a valid thing. That's
exactly.
A valid phenomenon. That happens.
And I thought it was beautiful that he was doing that, because his motivation as a character is that he was given dominion over all the earth. And he can do what he wants, because the earth, I have dominion. I'm king. I get to do what I want. I'm king. Hey, that's basically what he's saying. And as you can see in the movie visually, the earth is absolutely a wasteland, because we've destroyed, as human beings, the creation, the beauty that God made. We've corrupted it. And that's one of the signs in the movie visually that humanity has become evil.
But how about Noah killing three men that are about to kill an animal? Isn't that showing that Noah cares about animal life more than human life? Early on in the movie, that kind of half reptilian, half mammal thing that Noah...
I kind of got the impression they were going to kill him. It was partly self-defense. But yes, you could definitely interpret that that way, that, you know, and that may be why God chooses Noah, because he's got that sort of empathy for animals, and of course he's going to have to face a whole bunch of animals at some point.
But you got
to
love Tubal Cain. He bites the head off of a sleeping animal on the ark while he's talking about the dominion, to imply that maybe if we were vegetarians, we'd be less evil. I don't know.
Interpretive again.
Okay, we'll have one more segment about this controversial film. People love it or hate it. I don't think there's any in between with Noah. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I will not be with you next week, at least not live. I'll be taking the day off for Easter. However, the Bob Siegel Show will still air. We have a specially selected repeat broadcast, one of my many atheist debates. This one from November of 2013. My guest that day was Richard Haynes, president of Atheist Nexus International. And our primary topic was, would a loving God send people to hell? Despite the intense subject matter, I heard many comments about how friendly and respectful our dialogue was. So that's next week, Easter Sunday, a special repeat broadcast on The Bob Siegel Show. Meanwhile, at the moment, I am still in the studio live this week and joined by another living person, film critic Mark Boobian. Mark, welcome back to our program.
Thank you again. So in the character of Tubal Cain, what I see is corruption sort of embodied, sin, as it were, embodied. Everything he is doing is self-motivated. He's taking control. He's the most selfish man in the world, I guess you could say. But there's no sign that anybody else in the world isn't like that. They're doing terrible things that we see in the movie. And I'm glad that we see those in the movie, because that's some of the stuff that gets kind of pushed under the rug a little bit.
You like that because you wanted to see the reason God sent the flood.
I didn't necessarily want to see that, but I like seeing that because it awoke me to, oh my gosh, look at how bad the world was. Wow, God didn't just sort of go, I'm going to wipe you out. It was a bad thing. He had a really big reason to do that. It's not something he did lightly. And I also have sort of an intellectual attachment to the Noah story. It's just sort of like, oh, yeah, God destroyed humanity. Yeah, flood, whatever. I didn't have an emotional connection to that. And seeing the people and seeing the horrors that they lived themselves and seeing the mix of people, too, there's going to, there were some people that were innocent, and that raises questions, I think, that are good questions to ask. And then seeing the horror of them screaming in fear and terror as the flood is engulfing them and as the ark's kind of floating up and they're on the highest point they can find, struggling to survive, the horrors of their dying screams. It's heart-wrenching. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant because it does bring home how awful this task was that Noah had to do. And this kind of goes back to what I was saying, too, a little bit about the blind, prideful faith that we see in Noah as well. His family's experiencing a lot more horror than he is. But I think one of the nice things about movies is I can, I'm a little enlightened here. Maybe this had something to do with why Noah got drunk in the cave and why that's in the Bible. Because that's, again, one of the few actions we see Noah do in the actual story is that he gets drunk and gets naked in a cave. And why did he do that? What drove him to that? Why is that important to the story? Those are questions. The Bible's very terse. A lot of times I'll run into stuff like similar to that that I have questions about. And I've never actually heard anybody really try to address that except to talk about some other stuff that happened about
in the narrative where it talks about one of the sons uncovering his father's nakedness.
Right. That's what I always talk about.
If you read Leviticus, where that term comes up again, and this is just the Hebrew culture, a father's nakedness was the mother. A man's nakedness was and the wife's nakedness was her husband's. And even in the New Testament, they talk about how the husband and wife are custodians of each other's body. It's a very egalitarian thing. And so probably what was going on there is that he was seeing the nakedness of his mother. And
right. Okay.
We think of it as Noah laying out around naked. So anyway, that's just an interesting.
Yeah. Let me append my comment to say I've never heard until now a good explanation. But what I read into this is that Noah suffered quite badly in the commission that he was given. And of course he would, because humanity died all around him, and they screamed.
To be the last person on earth, with the exception of your family, that would
heavy
be over.
Duty.
Yeah, obviously.
Exactly. So that's, I really love the movie for awakening me to these sort of things that we got to see. Now, I do want to talk about God's character a little bit, but I do want to point out that actually in the Bible, I got challenged on this. I looked it up. God does not commission us to eat meat until after the flood.
You know, I've been hearing everybody say that.
Oh, okay, everybody. Darn it, I thought I was being original. Oh,
it is true that there's a place after the flood where God says you may eat meat as you've been eating the vegetables. But if you go back and you look at the people in the lineage up till Noah, some of them were hunters, and animal sacrifices were made from the beginning. Adam and Eve were making animal sacrifices immediately to atone for their sin because they're not living in the garden anymore. So I can see why people would say that. It's not the airtight case. If people were hunting animals, they were probably eating them. And what I mean is, even when you go back to some of the people in the genealogy who were being portrayed as good people before you got to the ones that needed to be wiped out in the flood.
Yeah.
So it's not that airtight of a case. But yeah, a lot of people have been saying that since this movie came out.
And I would have known it's not an airtight case just because it doesn't explicitly say, hey, don't eat animals. Because typically, you know, it's not, God doesn't just say, hey, go do this. And it doesn't necessarily mean don't do that.
It might have been one of the few things Aronofsky liked about God is that he believed God was against eating animals.
But. Right. And I think, that may be true, though he would have had to read actually one sentence after
He and Natalie Portman went out and had a steak dinner after she won that Academy Award. I'll just bet they did. With champagne in the works.
Well, I would have had a steak dinner, and that's all that matters to me. So now, in terms of God's character, now this is where I really have problems with the movie, and that's why the movie's more of a challenge than just saying, yes, it's a great movie. Yes, you learn a lot about the Bible. Or no, it's a bad movie. You don't go to it because it. You know, it's not representative of who God is. Well, you know, both things, it isn't necessarily representative of who God is, but it's good in terms of the things I've discussed about Noah's character, Tubal, Cain's character, and some other things that I took away from the story. But unfortunately, God really takes it on the chin, especially in terms of the angels who are cast out of heaven. The reason they're cast out of heaven is the most pathetic and terrible, and I will never trust this God ever reason I've ever heard. Okay, God creates man. Man, you know, does the whole Adam and Eve thing and gets kicked out of the garden. And these angels, they just want to take care of the poor guy and
they care
girl.
About people. They just want to help out.
Right.
And so why is God having a hernia over that?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you make a little joke. It is kind of funny to think that God
they
would have a hernia over that.
The angels better than God. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so, but that's exactly what's portrayed in the movie, that God had a hernia over them wanting to help man, and he threw them out of heaven. Now,
and turned them into stupid-looking rock creatures.
Yeah, now, see, I like that, and I saw exactly what he was doing, and I understood them to be angels of light from the very beginning. And again, it goes kind of back to corruption and in a sense, punishment or imprisonment in this case. And I know that's what they, after seeing some stuff after I saw the movie, I know that's what they were trying to convey. So while there's been a lot of jokes and, you know, not necessarily undeserved jokes, I still very much liked the way the Nephilim were portrayed, so to speak, in the film.
But again, the Watchers, the angels who rebelled against God and came down to Earth, it was their offspring, their children, who were the Nephilim. In this movie, the Watchers and the Nephilim were made the same beings.
Right, and that's a very important thing that you're pointing out here, Bob, where it's not accurate to the Bible. Really, I think if we were to really be more accurate, we'd be saying the Nephilim were the people, like Tubal-Cain would have been one of the Nephilim.
Tubal-Cain wouldn't have been because
he would have been one of the offspring.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's mentioned in the Bible. And with no information about him.
Right, but so, in terms of the movie,
In the movie, Aronofsky was not trying to portray Tubal-Cain as the Nephilim, but the angels rebelled against God and came down and actually had sex with human females. Their children were the Nephilim, and the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim are demons. So it's very, very different than what Aronofsky was trying to do here.
Right, okay. So no demons in the movie, but it's still a good movie, even without the demons. I liked it anyway. But again, the creator is sort of a ruthless creator, and I don't know even why the angels would want to go back to the creator at the end of the movie when they're redeemed, why they would want to go back to somebody that vindictively kicked them out of heaven, because he did not have a good reason, and this is not the kind of God I would want to follow, and it's not at all the kind of God that we see in the Bible. So God is not portrayed at all accurately in terms of his character in the film, except that he's a creator. That's it. That's all they get right.
Okay. Well, on that note, we have a note that we can end on and agree on. Mark, it's always great having you on the show. We'll have you back in a little while to review some more movies. And have a happy Easter, everybody. I will be back in the studio 2 weeks from now.
Bye.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.